and life for free. But you can give them to the birds and bees. I want the money.
Whoa, welcome back to Stocks and Giants. I'm Tom Howard. She's AV back on the board out of her hibernation cave, which we've all been stuck in. S&P futures down 450. NASDAQ futures up 13. It's after a big update yesterday. So we are mixed this morning. Do we have Brendan?
Yes, I'm here, Chief. How are you?
All right. I was just mentioning that I think our girl AV says that if you're going to be locked at home, you probably want to be like in a 10,000 square foot place like Pritzker than in her one bedroom apartment. Just saying.
I think that's right. There's a lot more to do in a place like Pritzker's than there is in most other places.
I would say you're right. Now, your mayor, on the other hand, I saw the Tribune thing yesterday. Whoever said, all power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Yesterday, they came out and the city is now asking the population to turn in people that are working that shouldn't be.
I didn't see that.
I thought I shipped it off to you, but yeah, and the fine for working when you're not supposed to is $10,000. They didn't even say they were going to cut the snitcher in. And they also said they want you to turn in people, even your own employer.
Wow.
That's a pretty
draconian method.
Is that like very Gestapo-like, or is that just me?
I was thinking the same thing when you mentioned that about turning in your neighbors to the Hitler Youth movement.
Yeah. There's a book, Brendan, that I once in a while I try and find, but it most people that have that try and research totalitarian regimes, and obviously the easiest one to do because they kept great records was the Nazi era and Hitler in Germany. And I think the guy was from Chicago, and that's why the Tribune wrote a big book thing on him. He essentially researched, where did all these people come from? I mean, who became the Gestapo? Who became, the people in the SS and the people that were doing all the nasty stuff to everybody? And basically, he came out with regular people. A lot of them just the regular police force.
What's happened in Germany in the 20s before the rise of Hitler with the Weimar Republic and 1,000% inflation on a regular basis, and they were pretty desperate.
Well, that's right. And speaking of which, how much more can the Fed print before we become the Weimar Republic?
Chief, that was one of the questions I have on my list to ask you this morning. How much money can we print, and how much is it really worth?
Right now it seems to be worth okay, but there's a limit to everything. You do know, as a contributor to Stocks and Jacks, the single brightest light in the Weimar Republic was that the stock market went straight up.
Mm-hmm.
Not because the market went up, but because the value of the dollar or the currency went down. Mm-hmm. By the way, in Venezuelan currency terms, the stock market in Venezuela was up huge last year. So I mean,
are you connecting the dots there?
I think what it's very difficult. By the way, it's not like that. We're the smartest bulbs in the box, or the lightest bulbs in the box. Most people, virtually everybody, is not set up to look at things in a three-dimensional plane like your money. Okay, if you have $5 in your pocket and you're, older like you and I, it's all you've ever cared about is having the bucks in your pocket. You go get a beer, you go get a loaf of bread. If you have enough of them, you buy a house or a car. And you don't normally think of, like, if the dollar goes down in value relative to the pound, say, you don't normally think when you walk into your local saloon and order up a beer, boy, if I was in London, this beer would cost me 50 cents more tonight because my dollar went down today. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't think that, especially if you live in the Midwest where you're a long ways from the coast, much, much less any other place, right? I guess you have some idea of it if you're somebody who travels back and forth to Canada because the Canadian dollar versus the U.S. dollar moves up and down, not every day. Well, it does every day a little bit, but I mean, you probably are aware if you were in Canada, let's say 15 years ago, maybe the Canadian dollar was equal to our dollar, and a beer up there was $5. You know, maybe you go back this time and you find out it's $5 Canadian, but it's only $3.50 U.S.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you get some idea of it. I'm not this world traveler or anything like that, so it's not like, you know, I've got the whole thing figured out. I mean, but the point is, you don't normally get this view. And whenever you talk about the dollar, you always talk about it in relation to another currency. Or even now, mm-hmm. if I say, boy, that, you know, the Fed's putting out so much money, we better worry about the value of the dollar. The immediate response from anybody on the show, I was, God help me if I was on CNBC, because they don't want to talk about anything like this, they would immediately say, well, what do you mean? It's actually very strong now compared to the Deutschmark or compared to the yen or compared to the Deutschmark, the euro or the pound or the Swiss franc. Well, yeah, because everybody else is doing the same thing. But then you have to look at dollars in the sense of what it is you're buying. So when you make a transaction, not only are you saying take something simple because people will understand gold. Gold's, say, $1,600 an ounce. But you also take the other side of the transaction, you could say an ounce is worth $1,600 if you had the gold. So if all of a sudden you double the amount of dollars in the world, you're not going to double the amount of gold, right, in one day. If you double the amount of dollars, then I'm going to say the ounce of gold is now worth $3,200.
Chief, you sound like you're arguing to go back to the gold standard.
I am not a gold standard guy, Brendan, but the idea that there's no discipline whatsoever to a fiat currency, I don't like that either.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the monetary theorists that I studied under, the Milton Friedmans of the world, in order to maintain the value of your fiat currency, you only want to increase it per year by the amount that your growth increases. Because the value of, and I mentioned this last week, don't ever think that the value of your society is in your money. Again, everybody's going to say, what, this chief guy really went off the deep end this morning. Don't ever think that. The value of your society is in the value of your people, the education of your people, the bridges, the railroads, the cars, the houses, the stuff that people have. And not just stuff you can touch, education, training, those kinds of things. That is the value of your country. Then you have something that you as a medium, a currency medium, a medium of exchange that you put out there. It could be gold coins, it could be paper money, it could be cigarettes, it could be God knows what. That links it all together. It says, okay, a day's worth work is worth X. You know, it's worth, it's worth two restaurant
dinners.
It's
worth a loaf of bread.
It's worth something. Or a year's worth of work is worth, you know, a real nice car or a small house or something. There needs to be a medium that relatively pushes all this stuff together. And most of a couple of the classic cases on this were in concentration camps where the medium of exchange became cigarettes. But the thing of it is, every medium of exchange, and again, I'm not advocating for the gold challenge, whatever it is, the fallback position, whether it's bottles of beer or bottles of booze, there's a value to the medium of exchange. So the bottom line is, people smoke cigarettes, and they were valuable in that sense. I was never a smoker, so, you know, I don't understand all that. But basically, for those people that do, that was, and everybody did in those days. That was your fallback position was that was the value. It was a cigarette. But so now when you start talking about money, well, we'll just, you know, the commercial paper market is falling apart. By the way, you're going to talk more about that than me, I hope, because you know more about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or the municipal bond market is falling apart. Okay, in the short term, if you think it's something that's happened this week or this month, you know, should the Fed be the banker of the last resort going to kind of prop that market up? The answer is yes. When you start propping up all the markets, all the place, all the time, then maybe the markets are just bad, and you're basically pissing into the wind, right?
Well, you know, that's exactly the point that I sent you that text on, because right now, this is a very interesting time for municipalities like the City of Chicago, Chicago Public Schools, even entities like the Tollway, if they need to borrow, because, you know, you would think that this would be an ideal time to borrow because rates are so low. when you look at the 10-year treasuries, you look at the 5-year treasuries, and I mean, it's so low. You say, how can you not afford to borrow at this time? Because you're going to get a great interest rate. However, the flip side of that is exactly what you're pointing out. Nobody wants to buy these bonds right now because they're not sure they're going to get repaid. Yes, the interest rate is very low for the borrower, but there's no market out there. Nobody trusts that the system will be there to pay their bonds in 5 years or 10 years or 15 years.
You do realize what you just said. Are you there?
What do you mean?
What you just said is what I've been basically ragging about now for a long time. When you talk about the interest rates are low, it should be a good time to borrow. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, if you were here working for PTI Securities and somebody came in with $2 million and wanted to put it in a fixed income and you put it in a negative interest rate bond, I have a feeling you're going to get fired by whoever's the family of that client, if not the client himself, right?
So yeah, I'm looking at it from the perspective of the issuer, from the
what you just said is they're not really low because nobody will lend to you at that price. The only person buying it's the Fed.
Mm-hmm.
But no.
I'm agreeing with you.
But I'm saying the numbers.
You look at it on the face of things, and you look at where the face interest rate is on the bond. I'm not talking about buying it on the secondary market at a different yield. I'm not talking about the yield price for the bond. I'm talking about the interest rate on the bond. If you were the city of Chicago or if you were the Illinois Tollway Authority, what's the face interest rate on that bond? Is it a 1%? Is it 2%? Is it a 0.5% right now? So from that perspective, the market value of that bond right now would be very, very low. And as a borrower, you would like that. You would like to say, I've got 30-year debt that's at 1.1%, because it's cheap money. But the problem is, as you just pointed out, that it's who's going to buy it at that rate. Nobody's going to really buy it. They're going to give you 70 cents on the dollar instead of face value for it because they don't trust that the money's going to be there to repay them in these times.
It's not, I don't even think it's that, Brennan. It's a synthetic rate created by the Fed. You look at the 10-year rate and you see 0.6%, you sit there and I got to believe anybody who's a contributor or a listener to the show is going to look at that number and say, I'm not buying it. What manner of moron
right.
would? And I'll tell you who the moron is. The moron is not a moron. The moron is Goldman Sachs and those kinds of people who buy it there because they know the Fed's going to call 5 minutes later and buy it higher. But we don't. By the way, here's our future. I just saw it. It flashed across my mind. Our people are taking this to Hungary's nationalist leader, Viktor Orban, is ruling by decree indefinitely. How far away are we from that? A month?
I sure hope that.
Do you think, Brennan, honestly, do you think that even though we've been, by the way, what makes, I'm going to ask you something before I forget it. Why all of a sudden, is this, I'm going to lob this one out there. Is this some kind of a takeover? I was listening to Channel 9 News last night, which I never usually watch, but I'm so bored watching my old NCIS episodes. They come on there and they start talking about, the U.S. now has more coronavirus cases than any place else in the world. We have 100,000 and China has 85,000. Why on earth, unless they're being paid or forced or the Gestapo showed up, would Channel 9 ever give an 85,000 number in China where everything we see says that they've got about 200,000 deaths and probably 2 million people have had it over there? Why would they ever put that number out there, Brennan? I mean,
that's the only official number that's available now. They can say that's known cases, and I believe that may be the known cases that have been disclosed. But you're right. It's illogical for me to think that China doesn't have many more cases than that.
But why would Channel 9 ever use that without any kind of... I'm not saying, at the very least, why don't you say... I mean, if I were to say on Stocks and Jacks, China's official... case count is 85,000, but it seems like that's a little light to virtually everything else you see. Why doesn't somebody...
Well, I agree that's the way you should say it.
Well, why don't they? Are they all in this together or what?
I don't know, but you know, the one thing that's conspicuously absent for all of this discussion about coronavirus around the world is Russia. Have you seen the world maps where they've got the red dots of where all the epicenters are? And you look at where Asia is, and you look at Europe, and you look at even parts of Africa, and then you look at the United States, and there are these red circles all over the place. You look at the map of Russia, it's all yellow, meaning no coronavirus at all, and a red dot in where Moscow is. And the rest of the country has virtually nobody. That does not make any sense to me. And nobody has said anything about that. You know,
actually, it's sort of...
Does Russia have this wall at the around the border that says virus, stay out?
I'm going to...
For me, it kind of makes sense.
Actually, speak louder, AV, if you barely hear you.
Yeah, I just don't think they have enough tests, and also the medical system is not that good enough to test all of the people. That's why the numbers are not accurate.
Well, I'm going to allow one question here at AV, Brendan, if you don't mind.
It's not a fact that people aren't sick.
Brendan, I'm going to allow a question here at AV, and you. I'm going to say that, just trust me for a second, or don't trust me, go with me. I'm going to say that this thing started early October. I think the Chinese knew how bad it was by November. They, nor their, the American counterparts over there that seem to, do whatever the dictators ask them to do. Nobody reported it in any real way around the world. They might have mentioned it, but nothing real. The amount of travel between London, the U.S., a lot of it in Iran, evidently, and that particular section of Italy, which is the fashion area, from what I understand, there's a spectacular amount of movement of people from Milan to China back and forth to where the clothes are made, and I guess they even have a factory now in that area in Italy with some Chinese workers from that area. So I'm going to say that the amount of travel for 6 to 8 weeks before the alarm was really raised and before Trump and other people decided to cut off that travel, the Chinese should have cut off in October, and they didn't. So whether they intended to get everybody else sick or not, we'll never know. But I'm going to say that kind of travel to other parts of the world like Russia, the average guy from Wuhan is not flying to central Russia, I don't believe. They probably have a hot spot in Moscow. But that's just one person's opinion. AV knows that part of the world better than me. Am I right, AV, that there's just not that much travel back and forth, or no?
About travel, I'm not sure. But definitely medical system is behind there.
As
in a lot of Eastern European countries. In Ukraine, the same.
I'm saying, how many people from Ukraine go back and forth to China?
China, I don't think it's a lot, but actually lately a lot of young people would go for work.
Okay. So,
but mostly,
I think
mostly
that's the other part of this.
Go to Poland.
It's not just social travelers going back and forth. It's the corporations and the entities that have manufacturing plants in China Russia. The economy that way. I've got some friends who travel quite a bit going back and forth to China, to Southeast Asia, on a regular basis, and if they were in that period in December to January before it became known how deadly the disease was, they were going back and forth freely. And even this line that Trump is using, that he closed down the border from travel to and from China, that was weeks after the U.S. airlines, American and United and Delta, stopped flying
right,
to China.
Right.
He did it after the horse was out of the barn.
Well, I mean, China didn't help.
Weeks for people are going back and forth after this disease, in Wuhan is a large manufacturing center. So that's where a lot of American companies have subsidiary corporations that are doing the manufacturing. Don't you think that the guys who are in American companies are going over there to check on their plants?
Well, I started by saying two things. We got no favors from the Chinese government, and we got no favors from... I'm going to say that people you know flying back and forth to Wuhan to check on the plants, that the head of the company already knew and he let people fly back and forth anyway. And that person should be flogged in a local square.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of that going. I mean, you can't tell me our people didn't know that are over there?
I can't disagree with that. I mean, I can't argue at that point. I don't know.
I mean, the conduct of a lot of these people is reprehensible. Now, question now comes, Brendan, if Now, we finally have done a lot of things that I think maybe were in the playbook or maybe just came in the playbook. Now, we've got the hospitals going in McCormick Place, and we've got the staging center at the United Center. We're doing all this, what I call pretty good stuff, pretty American kind of stuff, where we finally get an idea, we're pretty darn good at this. What if it doesn't really occur to the level at which we think it's going to, that it kind of stays at 20? I mean, everybody in the cruise ship, you know, our buddy Carl has been all over this. Everybody in the cruise ships did not get it. It's 22%, virtually everyone. When do you think society says hospitals are not jammed? Now, they are in New York, okay, that's a pretty dense area. If we say it's at a level that we can handle it, we got a lot of people recovered, we're just gonna put this up there as a bad common cold. We want to open the society. We want to get rid of the Gestapo tactics, and we want to go back to work, and the people get it.
All right. There's a bigger fear there. The bigger fear is that you can't stop it. I mean, and I'm going back to comments that Trump made back in February when he said, we've got 15. It's soon to be zero. We've got this under control. In another couple of days, it'll go away. It'll be nothing. You won't even notice it. That didn't play out very well. That didn't play out very well in Italy. It didn't play out very well in Wuhan when that first was let out about the information that was going on there. And I think the American public has a fear that those epicenters that we see in New York are going to happen here. And it's not only a question of how many people get sick, but it's when they get sick. I mean, if you look at, say, 2 million people getting sick, just contracting the virus, there's a big difference between having 1.5 million of those people get sick between February 1st and April 15th than there is between February 1st of 2020 and February 1st of 2021. The healthcare system can handle it, and fewer people will die because medical services will be available. And I think that's, you know, the key thing here. It's and that's just a question of undoing this or how far we're going in. It's to really stop the rapid spread of the disease in a way that the medical system cannot handle it.
All right, so I'm just thinking out loud, Brendan, because, by the way, I understand that. I get it, that given the fact that we were a few weeks behind and didn't have any tests, I'm not so sure there was anything else you could have done. All right, but in another couple of weeks, we're going to have a hell of a lot more information with these tests and everything. What if we find out we've got 4 million people have it, 1.5 million are recovered, and guess what? It's so far out there, it's like the common cold. Now what do you do?
Then you have to reassess and say, now we can reopen the economy. We can have people go back to work with precautions, with them wearing masks, with them wearing gloves, with them doing other things. But I think also the other thing that's going to happen is that our society is going to change in that point, whether you were to open it up on Easter Sunday or June 1st or September 1st. We're getting used to a new way of working and a new way of producing. You're not going to be able to change the way that Uber drivers work in their car. You're not going to be able to change the way that the guy who's in a stamping plant pulls a handle and manufactures a widget. But you are doing a lot of other changes in our society that we didn't expect, we didn't think about, because it was a different type of work style. And one of the things that I see happen is a big almost a depression in the real estate market, especially commercial real estate. When you see the big corporations who don't need two floors of one of these new office buildings is going upstairs because of remote working. You can go to what a lot of accounting firms have been doing recently, which is the hoteling, where they don't give their people an office, but when somebody is coming in off the road, they're given an office day to day, depending on who else is in the office. There are different ways that we're going to be working as a society.
I think that there's going to be some of that, Brendan. I think people are going to be so happy to get out of their house. Everything I've read was, and the people that I've known that have worked from home a lot say they absolutely couldn't stand it. They were nowhere near as effective. They were apart from the group. A lot of ideas that you normally just bandy about in the office, you don't. I'm not saying it won't be an increase in it, but the idea that everybody's going to work from home, I think people are going to be bonkers if they start doing that.
That may be, but I also think that there's a generational thing. When I talk with people who are younger, when I'm talking to people like Val's stepsons, or my stepsons, Val's sons, One of them is an IT guy, and he works remotely 1 or 2 days a week right now, and he loves it, and he thinks he's very effective.
I'm going to say that
our generation doesn't do that very well.
I'm going to say 1 or 2 days a week, I think, might be a positive. 5 days a week, I think you go the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying. I mean, I have no idea. I mean, but these are all questions. At the end of the day, did the stuff that people told people what to do, I'd say this on national TV, what they did in Italy, the politicians, by sending people home without tests, with the age of the population, the amount of multi-generational homes, I think the politicians are responsible for half of those deaths.
That's a very good point. I agree with that. And that's different from what happened in places like Hong Kong, Singapore, and South Korea. They sent people home, but they were all tested. And
right.
They isolated people who were tested positive, and they went through a tracing process. And that saved a lot of lives, I think, because they could isolate people who were asymptomatic and shedding the virus to other folks while they were asymptomatic. That's something that they did not do in Italy. They just sent them home, and you're right, with the multi-generation housing, that was a really bad thing to do. And in our case, as we were talking about last week with Maddie and the whole discussion about testing, we don't know how much of this is out there because the tests still aren't available. Despite the fact that we've tested more people than anybody else in the world, on a per capita basis we haven't, and we don't know how many people have had the disease and have been spreading it.
Well, but also we test somebody, and we don't get the results for 12 days. That's useless. You got to hang on to the person. That's why this Abbott Labs test. You got to test Brendan, put him in a room. If he has it, you go put him with other people that have it. If he doesn't, you can send him home. You don't send him home and a week later call up and say, yeah, you got it. What good does that do?
That's right. You've already been spreading for that length of time. Exactly right. And also, who have I been in contact with in your scenario? If I'm the one who tests positive, who have I been in contact with over the last 3 days? You can isolate me right now, and you can ask me, well, did you go to the grocery store? Did you go for a run on the lakefront? Did you do this or do that? Who did you come in contact with so we can try to identify who may have caught the disease from you?
All right, Brendan, we got to dash off the break here. S&P futures down 650, NASDAQ futures up 775. They were all up when we came in. Now we're mixed. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including 4 past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering 3 of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top 3 tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Sparks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tomorrow. She's AV on the board. S&P futures down 475. All these things were up a little while ago. Now we've turned mixed. NASDAQ futures up 1275. Individual stocks, we got Boeing up 470, trading 156.98. We don't need no stinking money from the government, but it looks like we're going to get some anyway, and the stock's up like $65 since that happened. Nobody else in the Dow moving all that much. United Health's down $1.66. American Express down 91 cents. Apple up a buck. So not much going on there. Dow down 6 points over in Europe. Got a little bit of a slightly mixed bag here, mostly up. DAX up 54.6%, FTSE up 44.8%, CAC around down 24 cents, so that's flat, so I guess that's mixed. Over in Asia, we got the Nikkei down 167.8%, Shanghai up 3, call that flat. Hang Seng, however, up almost 2%, 428, so we've got somewhat of a mix there. China manufacturing activity rebounds a little bit in March, so that's one of the reasons why the Hang Seng is up so much. We've got bonds 0.69%, 0.01% up. The Bund minus 0.49. Japan positive 0.02 almost. Wow, 0.017. Oil 1.54% up. 7.7% up. It's only $1.50. They don't get too excited. 21.63. At this level, a dollar move is a big number in terms of percentage, but still 21.63. And I'm going to talk to Joel over in a second about, I'm going to say that puts the on-the-field price in like the places like the Permian at probably like $5 or $6 because of the amount of money it takes to get them to a refinery. Brent up 78 cents, 23.54. In other words, no joy in the oil patch here. Natural gas 172, RBOB 60 cents. Gold down $30. Wow, 16.12. Silver down 1 cent. So the dollar keeps going up. Other people pouring more money into the world than we are, which is hard to even imagine. Copper with a slight move up 2 cents, 217. AV, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports? Not much sports.
Good morning, my friends. Mostly cloudy and cool conditions can be expected today in Chicago, especially near the lake. A gradual warm up is expected for the remainder of the week. The highest of the day is 44 and the lowest 36. 62 degrees currently in Phoenix. Partially cloudy skies this morning will become overcast during the afternoon. Winds light and variable. In traffic, we have another calm morning on the roads. Very little traffic out there. No delays. Chief.
No sports?
No sports.
Actually, there's a little bit of sport. We have Joel?
Yes.
Joel, how are you? Did you notice last night you're supposed to be noticing all this stuff for me, the NCAA decision regarding eligibility?
I did not, Chief. I did not pay. What did they decide?
Evidently, they decided that all spring sports, people get another year of eligibility. So baseball, softball, all that stuff. Basketball, however, is not one of them. So they do not get another year of eligibility. Now, whether this will be rethought or rethunk or whatever you want to say about it, I don't know. But as of now, the spring sports would be what? Track and field, tennis, golf, I would guess, baseball, softball, what else?
Yeah, I mean, it's great that they're doing that. For the coaches, though, that's going to be hard because of the recruiting cycles. I mean, I don't know what, you know, kids are going to be happening with their senior year, but it's going to be tough for coaches on the recruiting cycle, but that's good news. Sounds like a decent decision by the NCAA.
Well, if it's your third, I guess the next question is, so we always ask the next question. That's why people probably don't want to interview us much, Joel. Does that mean if you're a senior, a junior in baseball, which means you could get drafted after 3 years, if there was no year, can you now not get drafted till next year, or do you get drafted this year?
You know, I'm not sure how that works in baseball. I think you probably, if you have the talent, I mean, a lot of these athletes just go, you know, from high school to the majors, so, or, you know, the minors. So I don't think that's really going to be affected. I think you can leave early. I don't think
no, you can't.
4 years of eligibility. I don't know, but don't quote me on that.
No, baseball is very unusual. Like the rest, all these. Actually, isn't it odd that all these sports are different? I mean, you get drafted by hockey before you even go to college, and everybody knows you're the property of the Detroit Red Wings, but you still play 4 years at Detroit or Notre Dame. Where baseball, you get drafted if you decide to go to school, the team loses the draft choice, then you can't get drafted again until after your junior year.
Yeah.
So now if this is your junior year now, do you have to wait a year or not? I mean, interesting.
Don't know, Chief.
You say we have a guest? We have a guest other than you this morning?
Yeah. Well, you know, I enjoy the emails with the Stocks and Jocks crew, and, you know, you suggested that, you know, finding out, you know, talking how different professions are affected in different walks of society. Well, my better three quarters, Dr. Lisa Elkanen, is going to talk to you about the medical profession, and she's got a lot going on, so I'm going to hand her the horn, okay?
Okay,
Steve?
Sure.
Take it easy on her because she's feisty sometimes.
I'll just ask her. I would just assume if you were married to a medical person that there would be some kind of a shrink.
A shrink. Okay. Hold on, Chief.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, I'm just peachy. How are you doing?
I imagine you're just peachy. I imagine you're very busy.
Yeah, we are in different ways.
What are you part of the current care? Or are you part of the design of what the care is going to look like in 2 or 3 weeks, the new hospital areas and so forth? Are you part of all of that, or are you in the hospital trenches or in office trenches, or where are you?
I'm in the office trenches. I'm an internal medicine physician, a primary care physician. So we were pretty much in the trenches a few weeks ago, seeing lots of patients in our office, but we've gone all to virtual, which is awful. I have a desk job now in the last week and a half.
Wow.
Yeah, two of my partners are going to be, have been doing hospital medicine. One of them has is doing 4 12-hour days a week on a COVID unit at one of our hospitals to help out.
I actually just got a call from my doctor yesterday saying they have stopped office hours, but he also sent me a message 3 days ago that they didn't have any tests or anything, so what's the point?
Tests, that's the big point. So.
Yeah.
And so we stopped doing tests because we didn't have the PPEs to do tests, and we realized that by us doing tests and seeing other patients in the office, especially elderly, we were actually putting them in harm's way.
Right.
Bringing patients in the office, we did a few tests actually in our office, and we stopped doing them because bringing COVID patients into an office with other patients is just dangerous for the entire community.
I don't want to get you too political here, but we're sending them all to the same house.
Say that one more time.
We're sending them all to the same house. People that are infected.
Actually, no, that's not true. We are, but the hospitals actually are separating. They're doing COVID units and non-COVID units. They're trying to separate patients in the ER, people who are high risk. They're putting them in different areas in the emergency room. So, no, the hospitals are actually, and there are some hospitals that are becoming converted into completely COVID hospitals and non-COVID hospitals.
I think what's happened in the last few days is spectacular and so American, how we can actually, once we put our mind to something, we can do a pretty good job. If you, I'm going to ask you this question. If that test from Abbott Labs, where you'll know in 5 or 10 minutes if somebody has it, if you can get hold of that test, would that make you want to reopen?
No, because we don't have the appropriate medical equipment at this point.
Okay.
You know, weeks ago, I was complaining to the health department, to the governor, to our states, to our senators, and I realize now I was preaching to the choir because the hospitals don't even have it. Nurses are going online. We're getting, nobody has what they need at this point. Our system was short-sighted. We're about 6 weeks behind.
Well, you say six. I would have guessed four, but you're saying six is probably more accurate. Six is probably more accurate. I think that's because, I mean, virtually everything we've done in the last 3 or 4 weeks, right?
Correct. But I want your listeners to know that this next 2 weeks, especially in Illinois, in southeastern Michigan, is crucial. It's going to get horrific. So people really need to stay home, limit their time going out to grocery stores and pharmacies, and really just stay home. This is going to get worse before it gets better.
Doctor, let me ask you, I've been lobbing this one out there, and I don't know. I mean, I'm surely not skilled like you are in this area, but the fact that this got here, I've been getting, you're a clearinghouse, but I'm sort of a weirdo clearinghouse here too, with people sending me stuff all day long. The amount of people that have sent me case studies of themselves or people in their family, they're absolutely convinced they had this in like early February. Could that be possible?
Absolutely. I have people in January, I'm sure, have had it. I think that's the whole problem. You know, so we're diagnosing people, but here in Michigan, we can only, you know, give the test for people who are extremely high risk, medical professionals, or if you're in the hospital. I have patients sick, so sick, sent home from the hospital. I have one lady who was home, went back twice. Oh, next to me. Oh, are you there?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Went back twice, and she's, you know, it was positive. So I think we're underestimating the amount of cases. You know, for every one case, there's probably 50 to 100 who are staying at home, who aren't diagnosed, who we tell, we're pretty sure you have the virus. So this is the problem. You have 7 people in your family. We think you have the virus. You have to live in a room by yourself. The rest of your family can't leave the house for 2 weeks. How do we know you have the virus and not just a viral illness? We can't tell you, but this is what you need to do.
Is there a point? I mean, one of the things I'm absolutely convinced of, and of course you could talk me out of it. We got to go here in a second, but the policy in Italy, where it looks like they totally underestimated how many people had it, and yet sent everybody home to multi generational family homes. I think they absolutely killed people over there. Am I wrong or right?
Well, but they can't. What are they going to do? If you're not sick enough to be in the hospital, you don't have enough hospital beds to care for the critically ill, you have to send people home, and you have to hope that they have the facilities at home to do what they're supposed to stop the spread. I mean, our curve is just as bad as Italy's, and we knew what they were going through.
Well, I mean, I just wonder if I would love to talk to you again, because obviously it's a longer subject, and if it ever happens again, God, hope it doesn't. And obviously, we've done a few things.
Not.
Yeah, we've done a few things.
Yeah, because next time we'll have a new topic to talk about.
Well, let's hope it's not a new disease, for God's sake.
No, I'm talking about what's going on now, about what hospitals are planning for people on ventilators and who to stay on and who to take off.
Well, that's...
This is real. This is true. This is happening.
Well, let's hope it doesn't happen like it has happened in other places. Thank you very much. Say goodbye to your man for me. We'll talk again. I enjoyed it.
Have a good day.
What do you say? We go right to Kenny, AV?
I am here.
You're here. How are you feeling, bud?
How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you? I was worried about you.
Tell me about it. I got knocked out for a week, you know, although I never had the spiky fever or the heavy cough. I was told to stay home and just get better. And unless I unless my symptoms changed, I was just to stay low and quarantine and do all that stuff, which is what I did.
So do you think you had it? Were you tested?
Well, I wasn't tested because they wouldn't test me because my fever didn't spike and I didn't have that cough, but I had the achiness. I had the headache. I had the total body aches. Like I couldn't get out of bed 3 days. I was just so lethargic. So listen, that could have been the cold. It could have been the flu, but it could have been, certainly this other thing. So either way, I'm a lot better now. So that's good.
By the way, I would have thought that a guest on Stocks and Jacks, you would be a celebrity. Not, CNBC as well, but Stocks and Jacks, higher, of course. Did you read the story about Doris Burke? The lady who
did
does
I read the story about what?
Doris Burke, the lady who does the basketball stuff. I think she's terrific. The blonde-haired lady who is a color lady for basketball. The first really female color person in basketball at all levels.
No.
You know if you saw her. The black glasses, blonde hair. Anyway, she was with this big group in New York. They were going to do some game there, and she started feeling really tired. And somehow she got a test, and she was positive. But she said she was just tired for 10 days maybe, 9-10 days. And never had a temperature, never went over 99.5. She kept taking her temperature every couple hours, like I said. Never went high, never had the cough. Never had half the symptoms, but just was very tired, and now she's fine.
That's what happened to me. I think my temperature went over the same thing, 99.7, I think is as high as it was, but I was completely wiped out. Like just couldn't get up off the chair or get up out of bed. I just had no energy at all. I didn't really have the spiky temperature. I didn't have the cough. So, they said just quarantine at home, and if something changes, come to the hospital. If not, then just stay at home. So that's what I did.
Are you going to, if you can, if it becomes available like it supposedly, are you going to do the antibodies test?
Yeah, I will, because I'm just curious to see whether or not I had it. And certainly if I did have it and I have the antibodies and that'll be helpful to somebody else, then I'd be happy to give the antibody.
Since you're Italian, I'd be happy to have them. I'd love them.
Well, if I have them, I'm happy to give them to you.
Okay. Obviously that's showing promise, a little bit of what's the plasma, is the antibodies in it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So then if you take the test and you did have it and you recovered, which of course we're all very happy about, including you, I'm sure, now what? Now why should you stay in?
Well, I'm not necessarily so sure that I should, but because I think once you have it, you have it. It's like anything else, right?
Yep.
Now you've got an immunity to it, or at least they think you do. But there's so much hysteria around. Look, I'm still in Boston, right? I haven't even gone back to Florida yet because the apartment building we live in has put a sign up saying no visitors, absolutely nobody in the building. And if you come from New York, you got to notify us you're coming. You got to stay in for 14 days, blah, blah, blah. And so my wife said, do me a favor. She said, stay where you are at the moment until we're sure where everybody is. I said, all right, no problem.
Well, if I were you, I'd give a phone call. I think Doris Burke's lonely.
I'd do what?
Give a phone call. Doris Burke's lonely, I hear. She's by herself, too. But no, as this moves forward, Kenny, I have a feeling that you're not alone in this. I think we're going to start to have an amazing amount. When we start testing people, I think we're gonna get a whole different view of the world than we have now.
Yeah, well, I agree. I think, look, I spent 2.5 weeks in New York because I went there. My daughter had back surgery, so I was there on the 4th and stayed with her through, the surgery and then the recovery. And then this thing started to spin out of control, so I stayed longer. I wasn't going to leave her up there in New York while I went back to Florida. So that's what ended up happening. I ended up staying there another week. That's when I started to feel lousy. And then I finally said to her last Thursday, we rented a car and we got the hell out of there. We came up to Boston because I'm from Boston. My whole family lives up here. And actually what worked out really well was my parents were in Florida all winter, and so their house is empty. So it was the perfect place to come. And we get out of the city, and so we're just quarantining up here, which is fine. But I feel 100% better today than I did, a week ago.
Your daughter, she didn't get it, hopefully?
Well, not yet. I mean, she seems to be okay. So, and I was still worried about her recovering from her back surgery. But, all that's good. And she's not come down with any of the other symptoms. So I'm
well, good for you.
I'm hopeful that, it's good.
I uh, I get the feeling that we're gonna find a real lot of people have already had it.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. What do you make of? I mean, I'll lob you out my opinion. You, of course, tell me yours, which is probably more accurate. I'm going to say that this plan that the Fed is putting out there, which just involves printing more money, as far as I'm concerned, but I would probably in the short run do the same thing, so it's not all that critical. I'm going to guess, Kenny, that it's a 30 to 45 day plan. If this goes on, I'm going to say 180 days, we're screwed.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I don't think I think that's what they're expecting. Probably a 2 month max plan that they would think by 2 months would be through the worst of it. Although, you know, what's interesting is that you had Nancy Pelosi already, and you had some others kind of hinting at, you know, part two of this rescue plan, which is interesting because now what does that mean? Do they really think that maybe this is going to be longer than 45 or 60 days? Is this going to take us into the summer? I mean, look, I think down in Florida yesterday, the governor down in Florida said he wants everyone to shelter in place until the end of May.
Well, you know what?
End of May. That's two more full months.
You know, it's somewhere along the line, Kenny. These people in Chicago yesterday, they now are asking people to turn people in that are going to work that shouldn't be.
Yeah, yeah.
We need several things. We need this thing to be over for people's health and for other stuff. We need it to be over. The Joe Goebbels wannabes got to stop doing this.
Yeah.
This is becoming very Gestapo-like, and I have a feeling that they're starting to enjoy it. And you know, I don't. That's just me. I've been any all power corrupts in my mind, and this whole mess. Plus, I think we're at the point where the Fed, we just had Brendan on talking about municipal finance, and he's worked for that's his job. He did it forever for his whole life. He just retired. He says you got these interest rates down, and people are talking about they're down to where people can borrow cheaply. He goes, nobody is going to lend a city money at 0.5%.
Right.
He goes, these people are idiots by thinking that. I mean, if they're down to where only the Fed is buying, nobody's going to lend Chicago money for 2%. Despite somebody buying them up to where it looks like that's where they're trading, nobody's going to do that. I think the Fed is very close there to, we don't want your stinking greenbacks, so that the whole thing blows up. If they start doing this again, another $2 trillion, another $2 trillion, Kenny, I think we're after the Civil War. We got to suck the greenbacks out of the place. We're gonna have to get Volcker back out of the grave. I don't know. I hope I'm wrong.
Well, I agree with you. I think it's going to be a much bigger problem if something doesn't turn around very quickly. If we don't get this country back to work at some point, you know, whether it's May 1st, whether it's April 15th, whether it's May 15th, whatever it is, if this country doesn't go back to work and something doesn't turn around quickly, I think it's a huge disaster just kind of waiting to happen.
I'm thinking, Kenny, once you get the hospital capabilities up, if we start testing people and it turns out, 10 million people have either had it or now have it, and 3 million people are over it, I think you got to open the thing back up and say we can't win. It's the common cold.
Right, right. I would agree because I do think that I do think there are more people that have had it and that have worked through it and kind of self, have gotten better on their own. Yeah, it might have taken 2 weeks, 10 days, or 2 weeks, like it was for me when I just felt lousy. But you know, I powered through it. I'm also young. I was healthy. I didn't have any other existing problems. So I'm not necessarily suggesting that. It's not dangerous. It certainly is. The people that have compromised immune systems and all that, I get it. But I agree with you. If we don't get this back to work, if we don't get the country back to work, I think it's a much bigger problem.
Isn't it nice that you have a daughter having back surgery and we still think you're young, where 30 years ago we wouldn't have thought that, aren't we?
Yeah, well, actually, I just turned 59 on Sunday.
Well,
my birthday,
are,
so I'm,
you are
I
young.
I haven't turned 60 yet, so I'm good.
You are young. It's a 60 is a new 40, from what I hear. Actually, you know what, though, Kenny? I don't remember when I grew up. But everybody came from was in the Army. Everybody smoked, which I think kind of messed everybody up. But I don't remember, you know, people's dads that were in their 40s and early 50s or the grandfathers. I don't remember any of those people being really active or anything. I mean, there were some, but not, I don't know, anybody owned a pair of jogging shoes or had a bike or anything like that. I mean,
Not nearly like today, agreed.
And so, I mean, agreed. I think plus the medicine has people, And if you had any kind of heart ailment in your 40s, you were screwed. I mean, there was no such thing as open heart surgery or valve surgery or anything like that. Right. Nobody had their teeth. Right. I mean, it was
you were relegated to the rocking chair on the porch.
Oh, God, yeah, yeah. And I think that they have to. Well, just for instance, if they found 500,000 people recovered, you can't tell those people to stay home. You and I should open up a recovery bar or something.
I would agree. I think if somebody has had it and recovered, I don't understand why am I still being told to stay inside my house because I've had it and recovered. So now if it holds true, I should have the antibodies and I should be fine. I should not be contagious anymore. I should not be spreading it anymore. But there's so much hysteria that's built around this now that I don't think, people are not allowing themselves to think clearly, I think.
Well, if you come out and you're the mayor of Chicago and you want to stop people from walking in the parks, you have to be hysterical. You have to say how horrible this is going to be. And maybe it will be. I hope it won't be. Or you're the governor. You have to absolutely make sure that if you were in 6 feet, somebody in a grocery store, you should get arrested or something. If you're going to do that, you got to create a fear. And you know what? A lot of people I know are just not into the fear. Whatever. I mean, nobody wants to get it. I know some of my clients called up and said friends of theirs have died. So I will never shortchange this thing in terms of.
I'm not shortchanging it at all. As a fact, somebody tweeted at me the other day because I made a comment like that. So somebody was annoyed with me and tweeted at me that if I had lost a loved one, an elderly loved one, because they had gotten infected, I would feel differently. I go, look. I said, I lost my grandmother 2 years ago. Somebody gave her the flu. She was 100. She was in perfect shape. Right. She was 100, though, and she ended up getting the flu, and she passed away. She got pneumonia, and it was just uncontrollable because of her age, and we lost her. Listen, was I hysterical? No. Was I devastated? Yes. But I also understood that that's just what happens, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's in Italy, supposedly, you and I have our have a special place for that. Evidently, everybody I read somewhere, who the hell knows if it's right, that every person who's died that may have been chemotherapy, might have been anything, if they get this thing, they're attributing the death to the virus.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know about that, Kenny. I mean, you need
well, I think
truth
it's
and numbers
to attribute to the virus now because there's so much hysteria. Everything's about the virus, the virus, the virus, the virus killed her, the virus killed this, the virus killed that. I mean, listen, and I'm Italian, and I get it, but Italy is an older population. They smoke their whole lives. They're multi-generational. So, yeah, is it dangerous? Of course it's dangerous, but I think the hysteria that's building up around the world and the hysteria that's building up now and certainly in this country is if this doesn't work itself out in the next 2 months, it's going to be a big problem.
Well, yourself, you could never get on a podium and say, this is a bad disease, we're handling it. By the way, we would expect people to take extra precautions because right now it looks like our hospitals are going to get overwhelmed. We want to at least slow it down so we can handle it. We're not sure we will handle it in the end, but we know we have to slow it down right now because you don't have the capabilities for testing. That's to me is perfectly logical. But having to hype people constantly and making things more dangerous than it is. I mean, this thing in Chicago where they close the parks, they tell people to go out for a walk. Well, it just turned out, it looked, Kenny, like a lot of people like walked the Buckingham Fountain and back. So if you took a picture of Buckingham Fountain, there were 100 people kind of all like walking around the fountain and heading back the way they came. Nobody was sitting there kissing. Oh my God, these people are too close together. We got to close the place. I mean, what are we doing? Right. I don't know. I don't like people lying to me no matter what the reason. They think they're doing it to me for my own good. No, don't do that either. I mean, it's just me.
They're doing the same thing in New York, right? De Blasio and Cuomo, I will applaud because I think his efforts have been good, but De Blasio is becoming hysterical in the city and it does nothing to help New York City at all.
Did you hear what Cuomo said on Fox News the other night?
Say it again?
Did you hear what Cuomo said on Fox News the other night?
No.
He said that for a totally public health issue, sending everybody home was probably the wrong thing to do.
So it was the wrong thing to do?
Yep. Like closing a university, not testing anybody, and just sending everybody home. If you tested them all and everybody was clean, then yeah. But what if you found out half of them weren't? You going to send them home anyway?
Right.
What do you think, real quick, while we have you, last 3 days? I mean, I'm very encouraged, Kenny, where this is ended.
Yeah, but I also think it's window dressing. Look, the market has suffered a tremendous amount of repricing, revaluation, right, whatever it is, you know, the market's off 35 or some stocks are off 50-60%, some individual names. And now you've got the end of the quarter, today being the final day of the quarter, and you've had a lot of opportunity for asset managers and individuals to rebalance their portfolio, take advantage of price dislocations in stocks that are fundamentally sound. You know, Apple went from 315 to 210 in a matter of 5 weeks. It's Apple, right? It's Apple. It didn't change its business. It didn't go out of business. It's not going out of business. And so opportunities like that, all of a sudden you see names like Apple and Microsoft. You see some tech names. You see healthcare names. You see financial names that have gotten really, really, really beaten up. And so that's what I think you have the last 3 or 4 days. And even today, I think you'll get one last push. But tomorrow starts April 1st. It's a new quarter. Earnings are going to be around the corner. You're starting to get the macro data that's going to point to some shocking, ugly numbers. I think then you're going to get the market to reprice. I think the lows are in. I think like the 2300 around that level, I do think that's the lows, but I wouldn't be surprised over the next couple of weeks to see if we test it again now that as we enter into the new quarter.
What I think we're agreeing with you somewhat here, and I wonder, Apple was going to be Apple, but whether they're going to be Apple at 254, I don't know, Kenny, because I think when this is all said and done, you're going to see hospital bills or medical insurance going up even higher. You're going to see all kinds of stuff that the vision of the running down the block and having to buy a $1,000 phone right now. I don't know when that comes back. Did you see the story in China where something like 20 million phone numbers got erased? That they don't need them anymore?
No.
It's a massive number. Well, all I've been reading about is stuff from Wuhan, how they think if you look at the amount of cremations that have taken place, they think the amount of deaths is like 150,000.
Yeah, I don't think you can believe any of the data that comes out of China, whether it's data about coronavirus infection, deaths, and or macro data. I think it's all very suspect. You know, last night they reported a PMI number that was back in 52. Last month it was 35.7. This month it's 52. I'm not saying there can't be a bounce back. I'm just saying you have to be suspect of all the numbers that come out of China.
When you look at the market, though, we fall into this bad habit, even you and I that have been sort of grizzled vets. We fall into this bad habit that we talk about the market in terms of the averages. But yet, obviously, I have a whole bunch of clients, and people have investments. That doesn't mean we're at the stage now. Our individual companies, I mean, the market came back last time, but UAL didn't come back. GM didn't come back. Are we going to lose 4 or 5 real oil names here? I mean, it's almost trading like they are. Are we going to lose one of the airlines?
We might. Yeah, we might. I mean, oil's a whole different animal, right? I mean, certainly what no one's, and here's what I don't really understand why no one's talking about this as much as they're talking about the virus, is that the collapse in oil, caused very much by the price war going on amongst the Saudis and the Russians, and no one, you know, the Russians aren't wanting to come to the table, and so the Saudis just said, okay, watch this. You know, that's a huge problem, certainly for the industry in general. Look at it's certainly going to slam the U.S. oil industry, and so we could expect that there's certainly going to be some consolidation, at least in this country, in our industry. But that, in the end, might shake out and be okay.
It'll be okay, but not if you own Halliburton, and the new owners are Joe and Burton.
Well, right? I hear you. I'm not so worried about the mid-tier names that I'm much more worried about.
Right.
Names like Halliburton or ExxonMobil or Chevron, those aren't the names that I'm really worried about. I think there's going to be, and if this continues like this, I think there's certainly going to be kind of that mid-tier that's going to get are at real risk, but there may be a bunch of consolidation that's going to end up, you know, saving some of those jobs, and then some of those companies merging them into the larger companies.
Well, let's hope for the best and talk about it next week, and hope you're over it. By the way, if you decide to drop some plasma, send me some.
Okay.
All right, buddy.
I'll talk to you.
S&P futures down 23 now. We're starting to leak pretty good. NASDAQ futures down 34. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice.
PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? Have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities, as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. He's AV on the board. SP Futures, we're dipping here now. We're down 23. Came in, we're up. NASDAQ Futures are down 35, so we're not exactly sure what piece of news came out, but it doesn't matter. Market is very skittish, even though we've been up 3 days in a row. We'll see if that hangs in there. We have Mr. Jeff Joseph, and we have Brendan as well, right?
Yep, I'm back on.
Right. Jeff, yep. You with us?
As well.
Well,
good morning, Chief.
Morning. How are you? I don't know if you caught some of Kenny's drift, but evidently Kenny, well, he thinks he had it, although he never could get a test. But he was the 2 weeks of tired and everything else, and not as much cough as he thought, not as high a temperature as they say, but he's convinced he's trying to get the antibody test, but they're not out yet either. So, that's interesting. Glad he made it, obviously. And the idea that there's no test for any people like this, I don't know. We seem like we're surely flying blind. What do you think, Jeff? Jeff, you there?
I agree. And you know, Chief, you mentioned something in that last segment with Kenny that it was the people walking to Buckingham Fountain and back. That was not the problem in Chicago when Lori Lightfoot closed down the lakefront path. I think she took the first progressive step before that action by asking people to be cautious about when they're out and using even things like the parks and the lakefront path. Last Wednesday morning, I drove over to Michigan, again, after being here for a couple of days, and as I was driving up Lakeshore Drive between Fullerton and Oak Street, and then again from Monroe Street to the museum campus, it looked more crowded than a Saturday morning training for the Chicago Marathon with
really?
Thousands of people on the street. And, you know, when you're talking about keeping social distancing, there was not the social distancing. When you've got a lot of people in heavy exercise, whether they're biking or running, that six-foot perimeter is not the only thing that you can use because you're expelling, exhaling a lot further with every breath, every exhalation, which heightens the risk even though you're outdoors. So, you know, I don't want to get the misconception that what she did was just completely erroneous or completely dictatorial. She was doing it for a reason. She asked people to be cautious about when you're outdoors. People did not do that, especially parts of the lakefront where the path is very narrow and people are very close. And, you know, that's the next step in this in order to avoid more more contamination. You've got to take steps like this.
Well, they're telling us they do. We'll see. I think they're probably right. But, Jeff, are you with us or not?
I am.
We just went through the thing with Kenny. Okay, he was sick. He thinks it sounds an awful lot like it barks like a dog, you know, whatever. But he has no test to find out whether he was sick or not. Now he's got no antibody tests to figure out whether he had it or not. And by the way, he's tired of staying in his apartment. I mean, it's at some point here. I mean, I think actually this weekend showed a major step forward in tests and the antibody tests. So I have a feeling a week from now, at least trying to figure out who the hell's got it and who does it, we'll feel a lot better about ourselves. But an awful lot of people telling people what to do when they don't seem to, when they don't really have a whole lot of data to go on. That just bothers me a little bit, Jeff. And I don't know.
You're right about the data, and there certainly have been a lot of testing done in the last couple of days. Over 800,000 tests, 600,000 tests completed alone over the last 4 days, and 800,000 tests total.
Well, it takes 12 days to get it back, right?
Enormous amount of testing, but I still question, as you do, the data to reconcile it. An example would be if you're looking at the Johns Hopkins dashboard, as most of us do every day, you'll see that in the U.S. our caseload is up to 164,000, of which includes 3,100 fatalities and 5,900 recovered. And it's the first time I've seen a higher recovery number like that. But my question would be, with testing so unavailable over the last 3 or 4 days still, even though a record amount of testing has occurred in the last 48 hours, how exactly do those 40 or 5,900 recovered actually know that they're recovered? And I think this just all contributes to the what we spoke about last week, is since this entire response has to be data-driven and the data is still insufficient all the way back from the source, out of China. I don't think there's anybody that believes China's data, except maybe the World Health Organization, because they're bought and paid for by China, literally, in some senses. And it's just making this all very, very, very difficult. The data is a big issue right here.
I read a bunch of stuff. I imagine you're getting this stuff, Jeff, but if you somehow to be sentenced to be on the Stocks and Jacks team, if you aren't, we'll add you. We might kill me for that, but I've read some stuff where the amount of cremations going on in Wuhan is like 2,200 a day, and a normal is 400. So if you figure 1,800 a day times 100 and some days they've been doing it, that's like 180,000 people, which almost exactly comes up with the number that our man Greg was in a Uber car with the Uber driver, imagine that, like the last week in January, and the guy said it's multi-million people and already 150,000 deaths, 150,000 deaths, and that was January. So the numbers are almost exactly what this guy said they were, and that was, what, 8 weeks ago?
And, yeah, and compare that to their stated numbers of 3,300 dead and 82,000 infected.
With no new cases.
So that wide disparity, and unfortunately, we'll never really get down to this. So we won't. It's just the nature of that regime. I mean, we never truly knew the horrors and the loss of life from forced abortions that occurred under the one-child nation rule that dominated China all the way until 2014. There were hundreds of thousands of babies aborted. And we never really knew the full trauma and damage of that, nor will we. And unfortunately, that's going to be the case here. What's a little frustrating is finding the World Health Organization providing cover for China for political purposes, praising their efforts in Wuhan. Recently, a spokesman for the WHO said, when the dust settles, we're going to, you know, we're all owe them a debt of thanks and gratitude for being in front of this in a manner that helped out all the other countries respond to the crisis. It's just shameful. I saw a difficult video online last night with a World Health Organization representative refusing to ask a question and shutting off his Skype connection after he was inquired about the death rate and infection rate in Taiwan, for the simple reason, though, even though he's the World Health Organization, China, who gives him a lot of money, who has him in a back pocket, doesn't, of course, recognize Taiwan. So God forbid the World Health Organization would. So he first glossed over the question completely and pretended he didn't hear it. And then once it was asked of him again by a British journalist, he cut off his Skype connection and refused to even acknowledge Taiwan's existence. So, you know, and the World Health Organization is really responsible for leading the data on that other countries are using to make decisions. So there's going to be enough to keep skeptics busy for a long time when the dust settles.
Well, it seems to me, again, the knowledge I'm gaining are from people writing me and from having you guys on. Brendan was talking about people he knows that regularly fly back and forth to China. Now, assuming these people work for American companies, I'm going to say there was a 4 to 6 week, maybe 8 week, if I want to be a real knucklehead. I was going to say something different, but where the people in China knew how dangerous these people were getting on the plane to go to other places. And I'm going to say some businesses here in the U.S. that have places in China, some people in those businesses knew it as well and still had their own people flying back and forth. You know what? I'm over this kind of stuff, guys. I want these people flogged in the local, in the square. I mean, I'm over this for money, and you just never any sort of a pushback on anybody who's a high-end business guy. You get to use people like they're pawns. I mean, I'm over it. Should I be this seething or what? Somebody knew this.
No, I agree with you. I think that's absolutely right. If there were American corporate executives who knew the danger they were putting their workers in by going back and forth and knew the risk that they were bringing into this country by the social connections, they should be flogged. That's absolutely a criminal activity.
What are the chances of everybody getting arrested?
Zero.
I don't know if you read, Jeff, it can't be this high. I mentioned a thing yesterday. It's a little bit funny, but it's not. When I worked on the truck docks, the obituary column for the truck drivers was, guess what it was titled? Silent Wheels, right?
Hmm.
So I always thought it was kind of funny, even though it's dead guys, so it's obviously not funny. I think when the millennials all decide to croak on us, instead of an obituary, it'll be silent phones.
Yeah, right.
Well, evidently, somebody flipped one at me yesterday, flipped me off maybe too, but there's 20 million less cell phone numbers in China than there was in like last August.
Oh.
It can't be that high. That many
no,
people.
It can't be that high.
I mean, with 1.5 billion, I guess we'd never really know, but it still seems a little high. And that's a lot of crematoriums working pretty hard. But the
frustration is, and we chatted about this last week, so I'll be quick on this, but the frustration is when you know something is wrong and then there's still silence on it, particularly if it's for political purposes. Again, a book worth recommending is The Stealth War by General John Spaulding, Brigadier General U.S. of U.S. Navy. And he wrote a book about all the different battlefronts that China is engaged on with America, everywhere from intellectual property rights, censorship, geopolitical ambitions through the Belt and Road Initiative, just every in trade, every different manner that they're basically out to get and out to dominate Western democracies. And he itemizes all of this. And then we know, and we know it because when Luckbox magazine began on the China issue over 3 months ago, we were hearing daily reports during Wuhan about streets being blocked, people under quarantine, not being able to move, body bags in churches. And if our little magazine knows this, it's well known everywhere. Well known by politicians, yet our politicians are so silent. And the premise of John Spalding's book, Stealth War, from the very beginning was about some poor guy in Oklahoma working for Walmart who just made a negative tweet about China and was fired.
Yep.
Because they reached in and grabbed him and plucked him out. And the influence that China has on our lobbyists, on our politicians, and for some reason, and I'm not sure why, because Mitch McConnell is as bought and paid for by China as Joe Biden is. But for some reason, Democrats have chosen to be soft on China. For some reason, and I don't understand why. I don't understand the political advantage. Maybe it's a knee-jerk reaction to whatever move the administration is taking. And I would understand that because, you know, he's made so many wrong moves, it'd be easy to have a knee-jerk reaction to it. But in this case, where the evidence is so clear about the abuses of this country, and particularly the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, I just don't understand why this has not reached a fever pitch, particularly in light of, you know, we see yesterday that the open markets in China have reopened, even in Wuhan. Yet there's zero question that this originated somewhere in proximity to those open markets. And they're out there again, you know, selling bats and so this is all true stuff, not some conspiracy Alex Jones kind of thing. Yet we are so silent on this issue. I just don't get it.
Why do you suppose that is? I mean it's hard to wing public. I mean, right now though, you know, if Trump like him or don't, you know, says motherhood's good, the other side's going to say it isn't. I mean, we've reached this incredible, I don't know what kind of mentality we have here. It's only worse that everybody's at home all day with nothing better to do than tweet. But it's been obvious for a long time, Jeff. I mean, you guys with the Luckbox month where you put the Chinese thing together, I think if I thought back over the last 10 years, the bits and pieces I've heard, you guys put it together way better than anybody I've ever seen. But it seems to be somewhat obvious if you thought back, which is hard to do these days because the world moves so fast, it seems. You guys just put together a lot of stuff that isn't all that new. It's just, you know what I'm saying? That's not a criticism. What I'm saying is you put in one, it's like one, sometimes you feel about, you know, maybe this virus when it's all over, and all of a sudden, one day, somebody will write some really interesting article that puts everything you ever thought together in order, and you go, you know what I'm saying? And all of a sudden, you're like, wow, that is the way it is. And thank God this guy wrote it this way, because now at least it's in a form where everybody can understand it. And why are we bending over
to
these?
I think you've got to look at it a different way. Sometimes we need the space of time to see how the different pieces fit together. It's like putting all the pieces of, if you have a 500-piece jigsaw puzzle, you lay it out on the table, you know all the pieces are there, and you start building one corner at a time, and you get some of the pieces together, but you don't get everything until the puzzle is complete, and you've got a time to step back and look at it. Or even think about some of the Impressionist paintings. If you go to the Art Institute, if we're open again, and you look at some of those paintings, and when you're standing at a distance, it looks a lot different than if you get within a foot of it. So perspective changes, time changes. So a lot of this information, yes, we may be able to get it and synthesize it, but we don't really see how those pieces fit together until you get the benefit of time and see what happens next.
Well, how do you, let me ask you a question, because you two guys, maybe I'll put you both, if I was God, which I'm not, put you guys as the two presidents. We'll have a dual presidency like Rome did in the Oval Office. Put you two guys in there. How do you deal with something where let's spin back 15 years and when these guys were stealing, you know, all the Beatles albums, and Bill Gates walks in and he says, you know, Mr. Joseph, Mr. Kernan, they have 40 bazillion computers in China, and I've only sold them, you know, two things of software. It looks to me like they've manufactured by software over there like 40 bazillion times, so these computers actually work. You know, this is BS. I can't handle this. We got to do something with our property rights. And you sit there and you listen and you go, man, Microsoft's, you know, still doing okay. And all of a sudden, the next guy runs in and he says, hey, whoa, don't do anything to those guys. There's a billion Chinese people over there drinking a Coke every day. And then the guy runs in from Kentucky Fried Chicken and says, there's more pictures of the colonel than our Mao. Nothing's wrong. And it seems like some people have had such an advantage there, other people didn't. And as a politician, I think you end up going, and just this is my question, is there's one in here somewhere. Do you just go day to day to day with doing nothing because you can't figure out what to do, and all of a sudden it's years later and you realize the pickle you're in? But even then, you don't want to do something the next day. There's always an election. There's always something else. And all of a sudden you're 20 years later and you go, what the hell we got here? Which appears is what you put in the magazine. What the hell we got here, Jeff? But it didn't happen in one day. It just was incremental. And other people, do you think IKEA wants to shut off China? I even think they get the damn meatballs from China, for God's sake. I mean, it's so uneven as how it would affect people. Do you think that's part of the problem?
No, well, money is the part of the problem, and that is the problem. We saw it happen with the NBA, but you know, who cares? It's athletics.
Yeah.
It's not our livelihood in basketball, right? We saw how money silenced criticism of one of the managers who made a tweet in favor of the Hong Kong protesters, right?
Right.
And then we saw major stars step up in supporting China. And it's money. It's their influence in politics. It's their ownership of U.S. companies, and they extract it every day. They've recently, over the last 4 days, they began a major propaganda campaign globally that is assigning the blame of the virus, you know, to other countries, including the U.S. and including the U.S. military. And you know, this is a country on the Human Rights Committee at the UN. You know, I mean, these are things that kind of frustrate people. It will be interesting. You know, we have once the dust clears from this a bit and the focus returns to politics and the national election, and you know, it's been pretty quiet, and that quiet only benefits Biden right now, because you know, if there was no virus, he, you know, question about his fit for the job because of age and missteps or senility, you know, none of which I believe are true obstacles, but that's the dominant story, or the Tara Reid sexual harassment story. Those things would be front page stories right now, but during the debates, what will be his biggest vulnerability, and there's no reason to list Trump's because there's so many, but on Biden, it's going to be his son Hunter, his connection with China, the Tara Reid sexual harassment issue, and how he handles China during the debates is going to be a very big question, because he has been on record so many times as saying, you know, they are not our enemy, they are our friend, and they are not our threat, and it's going to be very interesting how he reconciles that with more revelations that will come out in the interim about how China withheld and lied about actual data with respect to the spread of the virus at the outset.
Well, hold that thought, Jeff. S&P futures now down 20. NASDAQ futures down 40. We've definitely sunk since we wandered in here this morning. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. She's AV on the board. S&P Futures down 20. NASDAQ Futures down 45. Dow Futures down like 300 here. We were a lot the other way here, and now we're not. But we're coming back. We were down like 33 at one point, so we're all over the place here without knowing a whole hell of a lot as to why. Individual stocks, we got Boeing up $1.84. We've got American Express down 93 cents. Apple down $1.30, so nothing kind of major on that. I am having computer issues here, so AV is going to do traffic, weather, sports, and then we will do the rest.
Good morning, friends. It's 36 degrees currently in Chicago. Mostly cloudy and cool conditions can be expected today, especially near the lake. A gradual warm-up is expected for the remainder of the week. The highest of the day is 44 and the lowest 36. And Phoenix, 62 degrees right now. Partially cloudy skies this morning will become overcast during the afternoon. Winds light and variable. Another calm morning on the roads. Very light traffic out there. No accidents reported. No delays. Chief.
No sports. You're so happy when there's no sports. Again, the one piece of news was the NCAA has decided to give everybody who is in a spring sport an extra year of eligibility, but not other sports, and that does not include basketball. By the by, hey guys, I got a question for you, just in terms of American mentality. I mean, Jeff, you've been very articulate regarding this, you know, the China situation and the fact that, you know, they're an enemy or are they a friend. By the way, the FTSE is down 14. We've got the CAC Iran down 66, so we're starting to move lower here in Europe as well. We got the DAX down 54. They were all pretty much unchanged earlier, so we are starting to move down just about everywhere. But my question to you guys is, not asking you whether I had a girlfriend or not, but I did at one point. This was before Audrey, and she was part Irish, sort of like you, Brendan. And we were walking down the street, and we run into this couple, and we start talking and blah, 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 and we walk away, and she says, okay, are they friends or not? I couldn't tell. So there was no middle ground. They either were or they weren't. And since she was my boyfriend, she was willing to roll with whatever. If I would have said friends or foes, they were her friends or foes. How Irish is that, Brendan? Just saying. Nobody wants to be our enemy. I think a lot of people want to be our friend. We're not so good, Jeff, because since you brought it up, but the people in the middle. I mean, we're doing an awful lot of business with China. People are making a hell of a lot of dough over there. People are offloading their child labor, as Carl likes to say. We're offloading our pollution. So we want for nothing, because if it's dirty, we don't see it. Yet it appears, from what you and a lot of other people have said, that China's long-range goal is to pretty much bury us, like Khrushchev said, with his shoe on the table. We have this personality, even Kennedy, who was, I thought was one of the brilliant men that ever was in the office, got kind of schnookered by Khrushchev the first time, because he thought his personality would carry the room, and it didn't. I mean, are we just not good at this, or what?
Do you mind?
Do we have who's still here, AV?
Yeah, I'm sorry. There's some problem with the phone.
We have nobody. Well, we have to call them back. It seems like we're not all that good at this, and I wouldn't be for one. Do we have anybody?
Hey, Keith, I'm back on, but keep getting dropped.
Okay, well, we're going to blame AV, even though it may not be her fault. I was saying, Brendan, I don't know if you heard me or not, but I was saying that we're not so good. Did you hear the part about my part Irish girlfriend? Are you still with us?
No, I missed that, too.
All right. I was saying that we walked down the street and bumped into a couple, and, you know, it was just a regular kind of, how are you, not real warm, not real cold. And we walked away, and she says, are they friends or foes? Want to know which one. They're either one or the other, if you're Irish, right?
Yep.
Your name was being brought up when we didn't hear. Jeff, I was saying, you don't want to be our enemy. You like being our friend. We're not so good at people that are, and we love offloading child labor to China. We love offloading, pollution to China. We like selling stuff to them. We can't figure out, we're not so good at being both, and yet it seems you're not the only person that's brought up, Blue brings it up, that their long-range goal is to essentially dominate us and everybody else. We're not so good at that.
Well, I think that's true, and I think we're letting them in many ways, because right now, with the U.S. stepping back on the world front, it's opening up routes for China. For example, in Europe, if China steps in to help with medical supplies, PPEs, for places like Italy and Spain, that the U.S. were originally put in, they are now taking a step where the United States used to, but is not currently. And, you know, that's opening a door for them. And, I thought it was very interesting when Jeff was talking about the Joe Biden, what's going on with him right now, both with his connections with China, but also where he stands right now relative to Trump in the polls. And I look about this similar to a Mike Bloomberg effect, that when Bloomberg was spending all this amount of money, he was rising in the polls. Then once he got on the debate stage and had to defend his positions in public, he dropped. And by Super Tuesday, the day after Super Tuesday, he was out. It's going to be very interesting to see when the focus goes back to a one-on-one race. Well, first, a one-on-one race between Biden and Bernie Sanders and how long Bernie's going to stay in, but also then between Biden and Trump. And
and how that's going to play out.
What do you think of, Jeff, I'll ask you, what do you think about the draft Cuomo movement?
Well, you know, it's interesting because he's obviously, you know, vaulted to the top of the charts in a lot of people's minds as an alternative to Biden, and he's been conducting a master class on how to communicate during a crisis, and you put him in juxtaposition with the mixed messaging and the narcissism and the ego that's so apparent when the president is speaking, you know, despite some things that, you know, clearly have shown that the administration is properly mobilized and properly focused and has all hands on deck and even increasing in terms of its approval ratings across the board, which is kind of interesting. But there's nobody that's rational and fair that could look at the comparison of the two oratory and compassion and empathy messaging between Cuomo and the president and say that one, you know, and not agree that Cuomo is far better the person that you'd want to handle your company's messaging in a crisis. So that's what's behind all this. It's clearly that he's a guy you feel comfortable with when, you know, shit's hitting the fan. And, for that, he's worthy of that increased attention. What's very interesting is following, and as you know, this is something of real interest to us, is the predictit.org, prediction markets, you know, that allow you to bet on gambling, you know, to gamble on political outcomes. And if I were to pull up, which I will right now, I'll pull up the current odds. Cuomo has actually come up out of nowhere. Biden is 79%, Bernie Sanders is 7%, and Andrew Cuomo is also 7%. So Cuomo, who's not running for anything, is tied with Bernie Sanders at 7 cents. These are prices binary options, so it would pay a dollar if he became the nominee. And that's a big number for a guy that's not even a declared candidate. He's trading only for a cent as a VP nomination, which is actually where I've made a significant bet on him, because you can only lose a penny, because there's no practical way for him actually to come in as a president. It'd be it's not likely to occur. That's just an emotional bet. Whereas it is possible that due to age, if the Democratic Party wanted to ensure more or less a strong platform for the next 12 years, you put him in a VP slot, knowing that Biden's an old guy that, you know, that, you know, is vulnerable because of his age. And, that would be a really strong ticket, even though you'd be passing up on Clyburn's, recommendation that it be an African American woman and Biden's, pledge that it would be a woman. I think you'd be forgiven by the Democrats, who seem to have a total fascination, well deserved, of Cuomo and his handling of the outbreak in New York.
A couple of questions for you guys.
I disagree with just a couple of things about that. I agree with a lot of what you said, Jeff, but two things to think about with Cuomo. First, this is a Rudy Giuliani effect. Think back to September 11, 2001.
Absolutely.
And Giuliani spiked, and there was even talk about changing the rules for the mayorship of New York because he was limited by term limit at that time, and the election was going to be that November, and they wanted him to stay in because of holding the city together. That's similar to what Cuomo's doing right now with this crisis. The second thing, if Cuomo was to say, I will accept a draft, if the convention happens in July or August or whenever it happens, if Cuomo says, I will accept the nomination for president or I will accept the nomination for vice president, he's effectively turning his back and saying, up yours, to all the people in New York that he's built this goodwill with right now. And I think that would be more detrimental to him and his career and his image than staying the course. If he were to say something like, I would love this, but this is not the time, I've got to stay here with my people and lead the state of New York through this, it puts him in a position for 2024, but not now. He can't do it now.
I think let me ask you guys a couple of questions regarding not so much opinion, because what's her name? The very cute young lady who was on CNBC, and then she ended up cute, terrific. She was brilliant. She went somewhere else, but everybody loved her. She was on with Jeff Haines all the time.
Then she went on to some other station.
Oh, Linda. Yes, I know who you mean.
The young brunette, actually spectacular, but she...
It's good you got your own show. That kind of language got Chris Matthews fired.
Well,
but go ahead.
Whatever. Yeah. I'm trying to. I didn't say anything that complimentary in my mind, anyway.
Well, but he had his own show too.
I know, but
yeah, that's true.
But she, what you say?
Well, owns his own show.
What you say? Opinions are like bottoms. Everybody's got one, and they all stink. You know. So, is where I was getting to it. But she said that on national TV, by the way. I guess you can do that if you're female. But she, anyway. The point is, logistically. I wouldn't put it past Trump to cancel, postpone the election. But you heard that here first. But say they don't.
You actually heard that on Bill Maher first.
Okay, well,
I've heard that before, and I've thought that same thing, that he's going to try to postpone the election.
All right, so, but my question is,
the constitutional question about whether either he or Pence could continue in office, or whether it would have to go to Nancy Pelosi.
Okay, but let's say that doesn't happen. But obviously some primaries have been canceled or pushed off, and there's probably a pretty good chance the convention gets pushed off. All right, so this could be hopefully pretty well behind us to where it might get rid of the problem that Brennan just brought up, and where Cuomo says, I'm going to run in the last two primaries, like sort of like a Bobby Kennedy approach, and he wins the last two primaries to where now Joe doesn't walk in with 50%. Now, I think he's a very strong possibility if he does that. Now, if all the primaries get canceled enough to where nobody can get 50%, and he just says, if drafted, you know, I will run, that's that in my mind. Now, timing-wise, could either one of those happen?
Well, I would, if I can, I would step back for a moment to Brendan's comment about his support in New York and how he'd be turning his back on New York. I think with considering his current levels of support, and yesterday it was noted in a poll that 9 out of 10 New Yorkers have high regard for the manner in which he's handling the crisis, I think his support is so strong there that that they wouldn't consider that as turning his back on New York, that would not be an issue, whether or not, you know, that he's leaving New York. I think they would overlook that. I mean, you think about the 43% who've supported Trump regardless of anything. I certainly think that a bulk of the coalition of the 90% that currently support Cuomo would give him a pass if he chose to run for national office in a move which is seen by some that would potentially secure the presidency for the Democrats, as opposed to what they still believe is a vulnerable candidate. Remember, when we come out of this, you've got Joe's allegiance to China, you've got Hunter Biden, you have a credible sexual harassment suit, and you have senility and poor performance in debates and some, you know, befuddled statements.
Not to mention,
have a lot to deal with in the go-to candidate right now.
Plus, as opposed
to some guy who's just represented himself brilliantly during a crisis.
When was he ever remarkable, Biden? I mean, I don't have anything bad to say about
him. He
never was. I mean, he never was remarkable.
But, you know, one thing about Biden, though, a lot of the talk right now about his mental acuity dropping, I'm not so sure when I hear him in debates or in interviews if it's really a loss of mental acuity at this point or because of his problem with his stuttering issue. It looks like there's times when he's hesitating that it's because of his stutter. You know, that was not divulged a long time ago. When he was running in 88, in 92, and other times, or even in 08, that was not brought up. But now it's out in the open that he's long time had a stuttering problem. And as you can see sometimes, when it seems like he's stumbling or not able to clearly articulate something, I think it may be because of his stuttering more than anything else.
Yeah, no, I agree. So, I mean, I agree completely. And unfortunately, you know, it doesn't matter. It's still perception. I agree completely. Plus, listen, he's a man who thinks out loud as Trump does, actually, who thinks out loud, who says things that he should only be thinking. I think much of the criticism directed to Biden for his oral missteps are not really fair, but I agree with you. I think that's the source of a lot of that.
Well, the source
I mean, from what a lot
Jeff,
of the...
I take your point about New Yorkers feeling that Cuomo should be president or would give him a pass on moving from the governorship in this crisis to being president. But I don't know the same thing is going to play in a place like Florida or Minnesota or Colorado, that they would not look upon him as being opportunistic, that this is his chance to really bypass the entire electoral primary process and jump in at the last minute. So it's not just New Yorkers. It's independents and Democrats across the country as well.
I think he needs to win. Well, again, I'm showing my age. I think he's got to do the Bobby Kennedy win. Even if he wins the last one, I think he's got to win one of them. Needs to be some... this is just my opinion.
No takers on this VP concept? You know, that just doesn't resonate with you?
For some reason, it makes
sense to me.
You know what?
As it's easy, it's less disruptive to the party, and it makes sense, but it doesn't resonate with you guys?
Jeff, you know what? You know why it doesn't? Is I'll tell you what. I have no idea why people pick VPs that they pick and never have. So I mean, I don't know if it's that much of a strength or not. I mean, can you? Kennedy picked Jansen, who he hated, just because of the Southern thing. Do you think? I don't know. Do you think it really helped him in the end? I think it got him killed.
It did.
It did.
That sealed the election for John F. Kennedy.
Well, it wasn't all that sealed. They only won by like a couple of guys voting out of the cemetery in Illinois. Didn't exactly seal it for him.
No. Even if you, I mean, that's a whole interesting discussion that we could spend an hour on. But Johnson being picked for vice president did two things for Kennedy. It gave him the southern states, the southern Democratic vote, because remember that was at a time when the South was solidly Democratic,
right?
And voted with Johnson for a lot of things. It didn't turn Republican until the Civil Rights Act came in '65. And the Voting Rights Act in '65 or '66. But until that time, Kennedy as a Catholic would not have won the Southern states without Lyndon Johnson. He would not have been elected president without that. That was a key issue. Other times, I don't think it makes a difference. Yeah, practically, it doesn't make a difference. But you do want somebody who's going to support you. That's why I think, actually, somebody like Amy Klobuchar would be a better pick for vice president than even Kamala Harris or somebody else as a woman. It was the same thing that John McCain tried in 2008 with Sarah Palin. It's just that she was the wrong woman to try to get the woman's vote at that time, but it was the same type of a play that failed. It did not work as well as Kennedy and Johnson did. But I think that Klobuchar is better for the Democratic candidate than anybody else would be.
When you say that, Brandon, let me dig a little bit. I'm going to get both of you guys' opinion. I'm going to push back a hair, not because I'm disagreeing, but... I'm not going to debate, because I think you know more about election history than I do, that it made it easier for somebody from the South to roll with Kennedy. And this, understand where I'm going with this, because Jeff kind of brought it up on the betting thing. It made it easier for a Southern Democrat to go with Kennedy because Johnson was on the ticket. But I think it would make it easier for a lot of people in the Democratic Party to vote with for Biden if Amy was on the ticket, or I'm not going to say what's her name, Elizabeth Warren, I don't know, but Klobuchar, because she showed herself to be very bright, very up on stuff. I mean, she's no dummy. I mean, she's a qualified candidate. So I think it would help. Yet I don't know that it actually, if she wasn't there, that somebody could turn from Biden and vote for Trump. In other words, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? It's the Southern Democrat was happier with the ticket. I'll agree with you. But if he were to pick somebody from Kentucky, you know, maybe not his South, do you think that guy really would have reached over to the Nixon level and pulled it?
If instead of Johnson he had picked Hubert Humphrey, or had picked somebody like that, or even somebody from California, yes, it would have made a difference. If he had picked another Catholic candidate as his vice presidential candidate, he would have gotten a third of the vote in the South that he made. Well, I'm guessing at that number, but it would have been enough for him to lose the South.
Because, I mean, right now everybody seems so, shall we say, opinionated one side or the other. I can't imagine somebody flipping from the liberal side to the other side or vice versa. Because somebody's, I mean, if Trump dumps Pence and you're a Trumper, I don't see how you vote for Biden. I mean, you may not like his new choice.
But that's another completely different argument when you're talking about Trump and his vice president candidate, because Trump's base is for Trump. In fact, there was some articles that I've been reading recently about the strength of the vote of the base and Trump's approval rate for his base. You know, it's like Jeff said, it's about 42% who would vote for him if he was televised shooting somebody on Fifth Avenue and killing them.
I know some people close to me that would.
But
scary enough.
You know, his base is very enthusiastic to support him. Biden's is like a 27%. Trump's is like 80% of his base.
Okay.
So when you look at those numbers, you're right. But we also remember a few weeks ago, we were talking about the similarities between the Trump voter and the Bernie voter and how it's very easy for somebody to go from Trump to Bernie because of their true believer status or from Bernie to Trump. And even though they seem diametrically opposed in many ways, the ferocity of their belief in that candidate would be enough that makes them more ideological simpatico than somebody going from Bernie to Biden or Trump to Biden.
I actually kind of lost it a little bit with a couple people that are close to me and both female that are absolute Trumpers. Every single thing the man does, even if he says it himself, that maybe we would not like to have him say, it's because somebody else was after him and was putting him up there. I said, you remind me of a mother whose son just killed four people and was the other four people deserved to die. I mean, what is there anything possible that anybody can do that, I mean, we have a contributor to the show, Bob Cerrone, terrific guy, friend for a long time, very conservative. He says, you know, I like a lot of what the policies have come through. I just can't stand the constant degradation of people, the constant, I don't like this person, that person. He goes, the baggage that have come with the man, the baggage is just not worth the policy. I've reached my limit. And I basically said to these people, I said, I don't care where your line is, but there needs to be a line. I love Brendan. If I put him in as chairman of some place and 3 weeks later I find out he's cheating on his expense report, which he never would, coming from the South Side, the man's got to go, even though I love him. And he's good. I mean, there needs to, everybody has to have something, you know, some controls on you someplace. And I agree that for a lot of people, Trump maybe hasn't gotten there yet, or you think he was put up to it or whatever. But someplace, somewhere, there has to be something at which you say, it's time for you to go. I mean, right? I mean,
what's that old line? You've got to stand for something or you fall for anything?
Pretty much. Jeff, what's the new, when's the new mag? What's the new month going to be about?
Well, we're working on, thanks for asking. We're working on two things right now for the next issue of the magazine. It's kind of around the current issue of the pandemic. We've looked at, you might know the name Dan Buettner. He's the guy who created Blue Zones. Blue Zones was a project with the National Geographic that looked at places in the world where people lived longest and then statistically broke down what the common elements were of those so-called Blue Zones. It's a very scientific study, and it resulted in habits, diet, lifestyle, purpose, aspects that were quantified, not qualified, as being absolute contributors to longevity and health and stronger immunity systems. So what we're doing is it's a health-oriented issue looking specifically at longevity, immunity, with the context of the virus, you know, how to make your body stronger against this virus and others that will come down the road in the future. And it's predominantly a scientific-based assessment of that. And we're also, and that's the issue we're working on for the next issue of Luckbox. You go to getluckbox.com. It's free. For the political trade, our podcast, and Brendan, I hope you get a chance to listen to it. If you haven't, the political trade podcast, that's what it's called, the political trade. We are speaking with expert full-time traders of political prediction markets, teaching their tactics and their best bets as to how they're making money. We recently interviewed Anthony Scaramucci on the podcast, but our number one episode in terms of downloads has been how I took $400 to $400,000 trading political futures, and that was kind of a step-by-step how-to as to some guy, and it was all verified story. We got his account records and saw what he's been doing. And we're just fascinated with these political prediction markets. It's just a fascinating, especially if you have any trading background at all, it's so easy to fall in love with this and start betting on politics. So that's we're spending a lot of time on that. And that's the Political Trade Podcast.
Hey, Jeff, why don't you send us a... So send us some kind of a banner, and we'll stick it on the site. We got a dash, guys. S&P futures down 1950, NASDAQ futures down 47. Really good stuff. Love having both of you guys on. Yeah, Jeff, throw it to AV, and we'll get it on the our site. Everybody take care of himself. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.